to order in subcommittee. For those of you who are new to the building, we've got a lot of activity going on in the Capitol today. Some very serious negotiations are going on, which are affecting some members of this committee. So I don't want to hold up progress because we have to return to the floor at 2:30. And so I want to make sure that the people who have come here, especially from a long distance, get a chance to participate in the next hour. And because of the tight time schedule, if everyone who's speaking can be very, very brief. Again, this is an unusual day. Usually we have 2 hours or so for our meeting, and today we only have about 50 minutes. So my apologies. We want to make sure everybody gets heard. So I will start off today and with a opening a public hearing on SJM 7 and SCR 10, and I will tell you in advance that when we get a third member of the committee on board, we will recess this hearing for a very short time to pass a bill out from our agenda today, and then we will come back to the hearing, so it won't be much of a disruption. So we have counsel here somewhere on this bill.
They went to find him.
And they went to find him, so I don't think we need counsel because we have Senator Avail Gordley here to start off this discussion. Been replaced by Senator Gordley. I hope you're a good sport.
Probably did a lot of job.
Normally, council does a summary, but we will rely on your good services, unless, Senator Gordley, you would like him to proceed with a summary.
I would like. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Good afternoon. For the record, Avail Gordley representing Senate District 23 in Multnomah County, and it's an honor and a pleasure to be here this afternoon for this purpose.
Thank you. Council, you could summarize the bill.
So. Madam Chair, members of the committee, SCR 10 comes here from Senator Gordley. It mourns the flooding of Cecilia Falls in 1957 caused by the damming of the Columbia River at the Dells.
It's Celilo Falls.
Celilo, I know. I'm sorry. Betraying my...
And then SJM 7 is also here on the agenda. We're hearing them both.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, SJM 7 comes in from Senator Gordley, memorializes Congress for the purpose of urging Congress to continue funding for the Silo Village Housing Restoration Project.
Thank you. It is kind of a hard word. So we'll take your testimony, Senator Gordley, and then we will recess the hearing to work our bill, and then we will return to the hearing. Okay. Welcome.
Thank you very much, and again, it's an honor, a deep honor, to be with you this afternoon and to have seated beside me Mr. Louis Pitt of the Warm Springs Tribe, and he will speak after I finish my brief remarks. I want to ask members of the committee to, as the story unfolds this afternoon, I hope that you will gaze upon the two photos that we have here in the room as the story unfolds, as the power of the story unfolds, as you hear the voices of those who've come to represent the story, again, that you will look at these pictures and reflect on the history that we're about to share with you. SCR 10 mourns the flooding of Celilo Falls in 1957 and its loss to the tribal people of Oregon. The destruction of Celilo Falls was one of the great natural, cultural, and religious wonders of the world. Ended a way of life that had endured and prospered for thousands of years. The destruction of Celilo Falls also destroyed the homes of the Wyam people who had inhabited the site for thousands of years, creating great hardship and great injustice. And the hardship and the injustice continues to this day. SJM 7 urges Congress to continue to fund housing restoration to benefit the YM people at Celilo Village until completion. In brief, Madam Chair, that is what the two measures accomplish, and there are powerful voices beside me and behind me to carry forward the rest of the story.
Thank you very much, Senator Gordley. Mr. Pitt.
Yellen Schwick, Louis Pitt, Jr. I'm a Director of Government Affairs and Planning for the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. My mom was an enrolled Warm Springer. My dad enrolled Yakima. So, again, definitely from the river. In recent times, we were moved from the river, our home, to the reservations that we have. I think a number of us went to Warm Springs, and some went to Yakima, some went to Nez Perce and Umatilla. We're here. Sweet sorrow, it might be called, is we want to move on. We have to move on as a people, as Americans. Celilo Falls was a wonderful place, still is, has a village there. We've got some Celilo Village residents here that can talk to the life of Celilo, and I, as a government person, have committed, I think, to carry the message on from our tribe that we will work to coordinate, I think, ongoing efforts to help Celilo, the people, be what it should be for the village and for those of us that still use treaty rights and use that as an area to house our treaty rights as we go fishing on the river. We still have our off-reservation rights, and the Wampum people, the Wampums, as the people of the river, have held the line down there for a long time and have been, to be honestly said, neglected by a number of governments. And so we are back, and we need the funding, and we put that in, a note to Congress to continue urging funding this. And also we're going to need the services of the state in the county for the ongoing services of that community and what we can't provide from our various reservations and that federal people just aren't good at too. So again, we'll need some of your leadership down the road to help provide those services. And again, I'm not going to dwell on the tremendous attack on our way of life that the Falls had done to my dad's, my mom's way of life. And I was just a youngster at the time. And wonderful, beautiful, unique place, one of a kind, as I understand, in our lives. And so thank you, Judiciary Committee, for your ear and time. And again, if please, listen to some of our Celilo Village residents that can put it so much, I think, more earnestly than I can, because they live there and love the land and were lived through the change. Thank you.
And thank you for coming, Mr. Pitt. We really appreciate you making the trip to testify.
Much thanks to Senator Gordley for picking this up and carrying out such a wonderful message, as she's always done, I think, for us. So,
well, she always has, and I can assure you her heart is in this one. Are there questions from the committee? Thank you very much. At this time, I will recess the hearing on these two bills, and I will open a work session on Senate Bill 112, and this should go very quickly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 112, there was a public hearing on this bill in February 5th. The bill allows the state or a defendant in a criminal case to serve a subpoena on a foreign or domestic corporation or limited partnership for documents, records, and other tangible things in the manner described in the Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure.
Okay. Any questions of counsel? Committee, we've seen this bill. There was some thought of an amendment, but it was unable to fit within the relating clause, so we're going with the original bill. Any questions or discussion? Okay. Senator Byrd.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 112 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Byrd, I move Senate Bill 112 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. I will carry this bill. Okay, now we will reopen the hearing on SJM 7 and SCR 10. And I will tell the people in the audience it is my wish, and I think the wish of others on this committee, to actually vote on this bill today. So it's really depending on how quickly we can get through this. If we can get through this while we still have at least three members of the committee here, we can vote on these bills today. And if it takes past about 2:25 or 2:30, then we'll have to have the vote another day. But the chair is very fond of these bills and is looking forward to hearing from you. So we will start with, let's see what we have here. We have, we'll start with the SCR 10 list. Emily Wahinija? Wahinija. And would Norma Miller Heath like to come up with her?
Well, my name is Emily Wahinija. My Indian name is Kasinwe. And I'll have Norma Heath Buttons, or Norma Buttons Heath, read the statements for me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good afternoon. It's an honor and pleasure to be here today. My name is Norma Miller Heath, Warm Springs. Good afternoon, Chair Burdick and members of the Judiciary Committee. A statement for Emily Wahinija. We are here today to testify in favor of Senate Concurrent Resolution 10 to mourn the great loss of Celilo Falls 50 years ago. Part of Emily's testimony will be an interest in the language of the Warm Springs people. The Creator gave us Celilo Falls, Wanapum, in our language, as a great gathering place to fish for salmon. For many thousands of years, people came to the sacred place from all over the Northwest to fish, trade, and celebrate. My grandfathers, my father, brothers, and nephews all fished there. My grandmothers, my mother, my sisters, and me and my nieces all dried and cooked the great salmon. The falls were so huge, the water so strong, that as you approached, you felt the falls before you heard it. I was forced to first feel and see Wanapum in the 1920s. No one could see then that our people would learn how to silence Wanapum of Michiwana, the Great Falls of the Columbia. No one could believe that anyone would think they could or should undo the wonder of the Creator. We were stunned in 1957 when the Dalles Dam backed up the water and buried Wanapum. Suddenly there was silence where the water had thundered for so many of our ancestors' lifetimes. Our hearts are still broken for Wanapum as our beating heart, our source of food, our place of celebration. I see that the resolution is to be given to the Confederate Tribes of Umatilla, the Confederate Tribes of Warm Springs, and the Nez Perce Tribe. I ask the Senate to also give it to the Wyom Board, as they represent the people of Celilo Village and the Confederate Tribes and Bands of the Yakima Nation. My thanks to Senator Gordley for introducing Senate Concurrent Resolution 10 and to Senate President Courtney and for you for holding the hearing quickly and reminding all of the people in Oregon of our loss. It is a loss beyond words. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. Are there questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Chair, I believe Mrs. Wahinija just wanted to say a few words.
Okay, please.
In memory of Wyom in Celilo, I remember back to mid-20s of how Celilo was. All the fishing sites by families or individuals. Some of the scaffolds had Indian names. And the one that I remember His name was Tom Nye. Tiawit was his Indian name. He had five scaffolds, but he was too old to fish, so he let people fish there. But they would let him have maybe one or two salmon, and the rest was distributed among those that could not fish, or the widows that were there. They hired out, a lot of the women would hire out to pack the salmon for the men so that they could earn their salmon to dry or salt. These were days that nothing was modern. It was like a stone age. I remember going to the big island with my mother. She had an aunt there and asked her to come and help her cut salmon and pack salmon. I must have been about 6 years old, but I remember going across on a canoe. There was a three-fire lodge. This was the Moses clan from Maryhill, Washington. That's where my Indian name came from, because my grandfather was from Maryhill, and my grandmother was from Touchfush. That's John Day. So anyway, the clan, they had five scaffolds, and Stahomsh was the name of their scaffolds, and that's the name that Joe Moses has today. He's one of our chiefs in the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. And the drying sheds were always on the east end of the building, the shack. There was two other families, the McKinley family, and there's just one daughter living from that family. They put up the lodges there sometimes in May or early part of June after the spring runoff. Of course, during the spring, there were a lot of seals that would come up and settle in those islands. But the fishing, the peak season, they came from all over the Northwest to fish. And off season, that's when we would all be busy cutting salmon for drying. There was no refrigerators, no freezers. So the salmon, a lot of it was in 25-gallon barrels to salt. Same way with the eels. And the pounded salmon was put into cedar baskets to preserve the salmon. And a lot of the people that could not come to Celilo, they were farmers or they were working out in the fields. They would can their fruit. The farmers would bring in their flour to trade for salmon. All fall, I remember my grandfather, my uncle, hauling flour, like 15 sacks, to trade for the salmon. They had to bring their flour, their wheat to Maupin, flour mill. And from there, they would go home with flour.
Thank you.
This is how it was during the summer months. Every year, every summer.
Thank you for that eyewitness testimony. That is very, very compelling. Thank you for coming. Are there questions from the committee?
And during those times, the merchants in the Dalles would not allow our people to enter their department stores. I remember a couple that went in, and the manager came, out, out, out. You can't come in.
I hope we've gone beyond that now. So I appreciate you coming. Senator Walker, did you want to say something?
I just want to thank them for their testimony, and I did read the Oregonian. They did a nice story on the falls and the demise of your community, and I really enjoyed reading the history and appreciate getting this firsthand today. Thank you.
Thank you. We have our next three witnesses have also come from a great distance to be here. Lana Jack, and Linda George Minas. I'm not very good at reading handwriting, so my apologies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've got floor at 2:30, so.
I know.
Welcome. Again, I want to remind you that if we're going to vote on this bill today, we need to.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
At this time, I'd just like to thank each and every one of you for your time and your compassion to this situation, to this story, as like they said in the beginning, as it is unfolds.
Could you give us your name for the record?
My name is Lana Jack. Mm-hmm. I grew up at Slalo. I'm currently a homeowner and landowner in this relocation plan that we are currently in with the Army Corps of Engineers at Slalo at present.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming. Who would like to talk next?
Hello, my name is Linda George Mianis. I'm the great-granddaughter of Chief Tommy Thompson and Flora, and I, too, am a descendant of Celilo. I'm Celilo YM, Warm Springs and Yakima tribe. My dad was Yakima, my mother was Warm Springs. And I am praying that you will pass this.
Thank you.
We are in need of housing that we were promised 50 years ago.
Thank you for coming. And I saw your picture with your great-grandfather. It's a beautiful, beautiful picture. Thank you.
I'm Ed Edmo. I'm enrolled in Shoshone Bannock, but I'm also a next person, Yakima. Been visiting on the river since I was 6 months old, so I'll be 61 next week. Long visit.
That's wonderful. I appreciate you all coming. Are there any questions of these witnesses from the committee? Thank you very much. Really appreciate your coming.
I had a statement.
I
thought you were just introducing.
Yeah, they were introducing.
Oh, okay. Go ahead and give a short statement. Thank you.
Like I said, as we currently try to figure out what's going on with how things are going to be done down there at Celilo, the Army Corps of Engineers and the BIA are hacking that out, of course. But, you know, one of the things that in being robbed of our lives and our livelihood down there as Celilo Indians, one of the things that we've had to do is adapt to survive. And our traditional ways have sustained us for thousands of years, socially, economically, and environmentally, in a society that gave us no value or gave our ways no value. So in having to sustain ourselves over all these years down there as Columbia River Indians, it's not been something that's been easy for any of us. I myself am currently with the status of Celilo YM Indian because I am not affiliated with any of the three confederated tribes of the Yakima, Umatilla, Warm Springs, and the Nez Perce Four, who are currently in compact with the state to fish and exercise their rights down there. But because I'm Celilo YM, one of the things that does to me as an individual is say that I have no place to be down here. Because Celilo to me represents the termination of a people. Celilo to me means that today you look at a picture, you see all these old black and whites, and you wonder where all these people are. And without a question, you can follow them and track them back to either one of the three four confederated tribes. But as a Columbia River Indian who is not federally affiliated, you know, do I have the right to remain and preserve the original integrity of what our people were, because today, as it stands, the U.S. government is telling me that as a Salila YM Indian, I have no place to return back home in this relocation plan. In that their proposal is to give me a home only if I relinquish my home ownership and my land ownership at Salila at this time. And so with that, I find that very hard for me to swallow, because we're not just the past. We are still here. A few new houses is great. Great. It's heaps and bounds. But social reform, and the kinds of social reform that needs to take place for our people down along the Columbia River, the promise that was made to us when this Salila Falls was flooded was that it was in trade for these things. They took a dozen white doves. They gave the chief a peace pipe. They said, from this day forward, we tell no lies. We will take care of your people until this day. There's no medical. There's no education. There's nobody heading up for housing down there. If they propose to put a few new houses down there for people who are living in poverty, how do they expect them to maintain it when the kinds of social reform issues are not being addressed down there that really need to be? So I'm asking the state and you good people to recognize that there's a greater issue at hand, and I thank you for bringing attention to this matter, because it is greatly needed, but there's a much rounded picture to it all, and I just ask you at this time to recognize that, and I thank you.
Thank you very much. Would anybody else like to say anything?
Thank you. My Indian name is Lamush. I'm named after my grandmother, Flora, which means the flower flowing against the river. But I'd like to say, you know, this commemoration is something that I'm very honored to have, and recognize that some people have really recognized us as Native people and as owners of the falls which the Creator gave us for us to live. And they took something away that was not meant to be. They took our way of life, our traditional culture ways, and but we're still survivors to this day. And this, like we talked about, this is 50 years of silence. There will be no more. And, you know, our elders will very be sad if they even tried to bring it back. But memories is all we have, so but we have each other.
Appreciate
as a people. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm in Edmo. What I miss most is the mist. I'd stand on the east side of the Salila Falls on a spring shine day at sunset. There'd be a light west wind blowing mist on my cheek. What I miss most is the mist. I'm bringing from a book of mine called These Few Words of Mine. There has been something. There has been something. Sometimes it is a song, sometimes a whisper. Sometimes it appears to be an animal, other times, weeping, I hear it. There's been something that has disappeared from my Mother Earth. I'm not sure what it was, but sometimes at night I can hear it in the wind, or it comes to me in my dreams, like the smell of salmon cooking. Thank you for the support of the non-Indian community. I'd like to welcome you to the 50th commemoration Fighting the Salila this weekend. We're going to have salmon feast, canoe journey, giveaways, washout service, and gambling.
Not bad. Thank you very much. Our next witness is Armand Minthorn from the Confederate Tribes of Umatilla. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Again, my name is Armand Minthorn, member of the Confederated Tribes of Umatilla, an elected official with our tribe. In my own language, I wish to briefly address about this memorial for Salila Falls. Wiatanat Kiwatas Ikuin Hiwas Imakas Pikun Salilo Tamina Komites Hiwas Ki Tatokan Ikuin Hiwas מצקוי לך שאתתו כנאות נצוח כי וים כי סלילו אימקס פיקוין קוין קוהיווס תמית ניסה כי תתו כנאות קומייץ היווס תמיני אימקס אני ום דיין כי הולסת When this world was created, it was a salmon that was created first. The salmon spoke a promise on how to take care of us as Indian people. We keep that promise today with our ceremonies, our songs, and our language. We cannot convey in words how much the loss of Salilo is to us. The ceremonies, the people that gathered there was wiped out by the federal government without our permission. It took away a way of life that was over 10,000 years old. From the very first man and woman that was created, they were given a responsibility how to take care of the fish, because the fish spoke a promise on how to take care of us. To memorialize something so great and so sacred is a way that we can keep a memory. Emily Wahanaka is my mother-in-law. It's people like her that we need to continue to talk to about Salilo so that we can keep it in our hearts and in our mind, so that we can keep our language and our songs and our food going. The state of Oregon, by this action to memorialize Salilo, is only an acknowledgement. It cannot be conveyed enough how much Salilo meant to us. And the loss of Salilo is going to be felt for the rest of this life. The people that lived there, the way they lived, and now it's gone. But our people today will continue to hold sacred the salmon. We'll continue to hold our ceremonies to preserve our way of life, and we will work with the non-Indians. We have no choice. But what's important in this commemoration is the water that is important to all of us. Fish cannot live without water, and that water has to be clean. So today, I'm asking the state of Oregon to help protect the resources that are important to all of us. Not only so the Indian people can continue our way of life, but so you can continue your way of life. You can't live without water, and neither can I. And our future generations are dependent on the same resources that we live on today. And they need to remember. And in some manner, maybe they will memorialize something like we're doing with Salilo. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mintorn. Okay, I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill Senate Joint Memorial 7 and SCR 10. And I'm going to open a work session on Senate Joint Memorial 7. Senator Walker.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Joint Memorial 7 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved Senate Joint Memorial 7 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Open a work session on SCR 10. Senator Walker.
Madam Chair, I move SCR 10 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved SCR 10 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Mr. Cruz, I assume Senator Gordley would like to carry these bills. We will assign these bills to Senator Gordley, who will be discussing them on the floor of the Senate, and I expect a favorable reception. I want to thank you all again for coming and sharing your personal history with us.
Madam Chair, before you close, I'd also like to thank everyone that came today. I know they traveled a long ways. It's very nice to hear the story from you as compared to just having it in writing. It means so much to hear it from the heart. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, I will now open a public hearing on Senate Bill 552. Council. We'll stand at ease for a moment we'll stand at ease. Public hearing on Senate Bill 552. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 552 permits the City of Milwaukee to use photo traffic device enforcement and photo radar.
Okay, we'll start with Representative Tomei, if she's here. Has she arrived yet? What we'll do is we'll bring the Milwaukee folks up, Carlotta Collette, Mike Swanson, and Larry Kanzler. And I'm sure Representative Tomei and or Senator Brown will want to join you when they get here. I just want to make sure at least we get our out-of-towners an audience before we have to run off. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much.
Do you want to go first, Chief, or do you want me to?
I can. My name is Larry Kanzler. I'm the Chief of Police for the City of Milwaukee. Thank you, Chairman Burdick, and the committee for hearing us on this issue of public safety. I've been in law enforcement in the state of Oregon for more than 40 years. I've had the privilege of serving as Chief of Police in three different jurisdictions in the state of Oregon, and worked for five separate law enforcement agencies, from the city of Portland to small agencies like Toledo. So I've had a good education, training, and experience in trying to help the public solve public safety issues. It has come to my office, and it comes repeatedly, about complaints about traffic and speeding in our community. Over the past 6 years, we've tried to generate support from the legislature to get, at the request of our community, the opportunity to reinforce the public safety aspects of traffic enforcement through the use of photo radar and photo traffic red light enforcement. I am the staff representative for a committee called the Public Safety Advisory Committee for the City of Milwaukee. The Public Safety Advisory Committee represents every neighborhood association in the city. The biggest single complaint that I get in my office is speeding through the residential streets and disobeying traffic lights. This last year, a small agency like Milwaukee is stretched very thin. Resources are very guarded because of the costs associated. We have managed to execute a public safety plan that's caused a reduction in our Part 1 crime rates by 28%, but has left unsolved the problem of speeding and red light violations. Milwaukee is bisected by two state highways, Highway 224 and Highway 99, and abuts the southern boundary of Portland. So although Milwaukee has a population center of about 20,000, it really represents the population center of Portland, because as you travel from Portland to Milwaukee, it's transparent. You can't tell when you leave Portland and go into Milwaukee. Highway speeds on McLaughlin Avenue have been cited by our traffic officers in excess of 90 miles an hour. The over 300 traffic accidents occurring at red light intersections on highways 224 and on McLaughlin represent 50% of the over 350 serious injury accidents we have there every year. It is physically impossible for the Milwaukee Police Department to supervise each of the red light locations. Every day, 80,000 commuters travel through the city of Milwaukee on highways 99 and 224 to and from the city of Portland. As these highways back up and start to slow down, the commuter traffic diverts on any of the exits from from these highways in through the surface streets of the city of Milwaukee. And as they travel through, they try to get to their destination, which is usually someplace in Portland. We see this in the morning as it travels down through the 9 different school zones that we operate, and we see it again in the afternoon as they travel and commute back home. Milwaukee is a full-service city, and for the police department to generate the type of resources we would need to try to compete with the problem we're seeing would cause a reduction of library staff, planning staff, and everybody else. Everybody would have to sacrifice for the benefit of trying to regulate our traffic enforcement problems. I need your help. The city of Milwaukee needs your help. I am unable to solve the problems that are being created by traffic and congestion and the growth in South County without the technical support provided by photo radar and photo red light enforcement. Any questions?
Thank you. We've been joined by Representative Tomei. Representative Tomei, as you can tell, we've had a very strange schedule today, so I went ahead and got started with this panel and announced that you would be joining us. So I'll give this time to you now to make any remarks you'd like to.
Thank you so much, Chair, and members of this committee. For the record, I am State Representative Carolyn Tomei. I represent Milwaukee and Southeast Portland House District 41. Everything that I was going to say has just been said. I was the former mayor of Milwaukee, as some of you may realize, and we started seeing budget problems as soon as I was on the council, even before I was mayor. And the issues that Chief Kanzler is talking about started early on when the income in Milwaukee started to come down, as it did across the state. And so we had fewer and fewer police officers to deal with more and more traffic. So this is a bill that we've been trying to pass for several sessions now. We would certainly appreciate your support. We have, of course, I assume that Councillor Carlotta Collette has not had a chance to speak, and our city manager, Mike Swanson, who became city manager while I was still mayor. And they probably can tell you a lot more about this bill than I can, but I would really appreciate you passing this bill and sending it onto the floor and sending it over to the House so that we can pass it there. So we are having a strange day, too, and I'm going to go back to the House. So thank you so much. Any questions before I slip out?
Any questions of Representative Tomei? Go do good work, Representative Tomei.
I will try. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, let's continue on with the panel. Thank you.
I'm Carlotta Collette. I'm a city council member in the city of Milwaukee, and I also may bring a different perspective here. I'm also a speeder who was caught by photo radar, and so I'm here to say that I think it is the most cost-effective and efficient way to control speeding in our communities. I hear, as a locally elected official, I hear almost daily the concerns of my neighbors about people speeding through their streets. And that we just simply cannot have police officers on every corner when a kid steps off that corner to walk toward the school. We really do not have the resources to be out there protecting our citizens the way we really would like to. People like me, who go slightly more than the speed limit, learn very quickly from getting that little letter in the mail with your picture on it saying, you've been caught speeding. It's a tremendous means of enforcing speed limits, and I highly encourage you to help us bring that means, that tool, to Milwaukee, because as the chief said, we have 50,000, 90,000 cars racing through our community every day, and we simply can't do it without your help, cannot control the speeding on those streets. So thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you very much. Next.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mike Swanson. I'm the Milwaukee City Manager. Here today to speak in support of Senate Bill 552. Business address is 10722 Southeast Main, Milwaukee. Our citizens, I think, consistently identify traffic volume and speed to be, if not the major issue, certainly one of the major issues, although I think that consistently we hear it is the major issue. The concern is the safety of their neighborhoods and their community. Our location means that we are visited daily by tens of thousands of vehicles, each searching for the quickest and least overcrowded route to work. Bounded on two sides by major state highways, McLaughlin and Highway 224, our small downtown and historic Milwaukee neighborhood, for example, experience a great deal of cut-through traffic as commuters abandon one crowded route for what they hope to be a less congested one. Their thoughts are not always focused on respecting the neighborhood pedestrians or the two schools located within that confined space. The concerns about traffic safety are not limited just to the downtown and historic Milwaukee neighborhood. It's an issue within each of the city's neighborhoods, and it's an issue we take seriously. Our police department supports a very active traffic enforcement program, and our policy is to provide that unit with the best equipment and training we can identify. We will continue to do so. But two officers, no matter how good they are, and these guys are really good, can only provide so much coverage with traffic at record levels and growth projections promising even more. Red light photo enforcement and photo radar would supplement our efforts to meet the safety challenges that face us. Red light photo and photo radar would never replace Officers Olson and Redenbaugh. I can't imagine anything or anyone being good enough to do that. But it'll complement their efforts to make ours a safer city, and it will do so at a reasonable cost. One question that you might ask is, well, why don't you talk with the chief about designating another officer to the traffic division? I've attached, and I will provide the assistant with a copy, of a report from the Portland Police Data System regarding Part 1 and Part 2 crimes. Captures the data for the weeks 12-10-2006 through 12-16-2006 and updates Milwaukee's year-to-date crime experience. For Part 1 crimes, those that are the most serious, you will see a reduction of 28% between the 2 years in the city of Milwaukee. For Part 2 crimes, you'll see an increase of only 1%. The total change in both between the 2 years for the same time period is a reduction of 12%. That reduction stems from a number of factors: Chief Kanzler's leadership, the City Council and Budget Committee support, and the fact that city departments work as a team and not as discrete units. But chief among the reasons for the reduction are the men and women who serve as Milwaukee police officers. Adding to the traffic unit by taking resources from other areas of the department will only endanger their efforts that have produced reductions in crime that we're now experiencing. So then you might ask, if traffic enforcement is such a high priority, why don't you hire and equip more traffic enforcement officers? As city manager, I'm also the budget officer. My challenge each year is to identify ways in which our limited financial resources can produce results. Generally stated, a city's mission is to provide a general array of services. City staff understands that each city department and service is strong because we are all strong. Our library and police department are funded, for example, from the city general fund, whose major revenue source is our permanent rate. In most places I've worked, each department wages a creative battle to fund their operations at the expense of others. It is survival of the fittest, or maybe the most devious, with the loser being many services the public expects. We simply don't play that game. We see things differently in Milwaukee. Each of us is as strong as the next, and each of us is only as strong as the whole. To hire and equip an additional traffic officer will cost roughly $100,000. Another cost will most certainly be the elimination of positions within the library, a reduction of code enforcement, or a reduction in our public information efforts. We've achieved a balance among city services that ensures our citizens results in return for tax dollars. But the balance is a fine one. We cannot afford to rob any one service to strengthen another. Photo red light enforcement and photo radar allow us to maintain the balance among all of our services while strengthening our traffic enforcement efforts. A final issue I want to address is the claim that photo red light enforcement, photo radar are unwarranted intrusions into private lives. The argument is then made that, you know, why should we extend it to yet one more jurisdiction? Statutory authority for the programs, of course, is found at ORS 810-434 and 438. I'm personally struck by the attention each provision gives to notifying the driving public of the use of these two tools. If the city were authorized to use photo red light, we would be required to provide a public information campaign to inform local drivers about the use of cameras before citations are actually issued. If we're authorized to use photo radar, it's required that we announce its use by posting a sign announcing the fact on the streets.
We will also be required to post signs at all major routes entering the city notifying the driving public that compliance with traffic control devices is enforced through cameras. Finally, even though the statutes create a presumption that the registered owner of the vehicles was its operator when the citation was issued, it's a presumption that if wrong is easily reversed without a court appearance by filing a certificate of innocence. It appears to me that the legislature exercised great care to ensure that photo red light enforcement and photo radar did not unfairly intrude. In conclusion, we request the authority to add these tools to those we now employ in ensuring the safety of our city and its neighborhoods, and I urge your favorable consideration of Senate Bill 552. Thank you.
Thank you. And we've been joined by Senator Brown, who brought not only testimony but tidings that the floor session has been delayed, so we will stick through it till our regular adjournment time at 2:45, which means we'll be able to hear Senate Bill 528 next. And now I would like to welcome Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members, for the record, State Senator Kate Brown. I represent Senate District 21, which includes the lovely city of Milwaukee. We introduced this bill. This is, I believe, our third session in trying to get Milwaukee to have the tool of photo radar. And I am still in support of the bill, despite the fact that I received, I think it's my first speeding ticket ever this year on Woodstock Boulevard a few months ago, so by a lovely camera. So I just really urge your consideration of the bill. I appreciate your time and willingness to hear the bill. And given where the city is positioned, it's absolutely critical that they have this tool. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Brown. Actually, you got your ticket before voting for this bill. I got my photo radar ticket after voting.
Well, and it's ironic, but Senator Brown and I got it at the exact same place for going the exact same 37 miles an hour.
And just for the record, Madam Chair, we could see the 35 mile an hour speed limit, and she protested, and I did not, and she got her fine reduced, and I did not. So I've learned a lesson, but I didn't end up in a Steve Dean column, so that's a good thing.
It's a cruel, cold world out there, Senator Brown.
You
got a ticket for going 37 and a 35?
Well, no, it was a transition zone,
it
25
to
35. It was a sort of.
They pulled that trick on Barber Boulevard too. So
yes.
Just be careful on Barber. I speak from experience.
It works though, doesn't it?
It
you
does.
Don't you drive the speed limit now?
Oh my! Well, sometimes.
This is Senator Burdick you're talking to.
On my cell phone, of course.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Any questions
from the committee?
Yes, definitely questions. For the city manager, you said that the cost for officers in your city is approximate cost $100,000. And that's on an annual basis. Does that include training and everything?
Yes.
What is the philosophy, at this point, how many photo radar machines do you believe that should be operating in the city?
One. Just one machine. One photo radar machine would be one.
Have one. And that cost for that machine is?
About $2,500 on a lease. It'd be about $2,500 a week. I'm sorry, $2,500 a month.
Monthly?
Monthly. $2,500 a month to lease the equipment.
Okay. And then on the red light equipment, how many do you expect to own and operate or lease and operate?
I would hope to have 8. We've got about 11 locations where we've had very high-speed collisions on McLaughlin on 224. And it would be my desire to have photo and traffic enforcement at those lights to reduce it. Portland has seen a reduction of about 75% in the number of accidents at the locations where they've had the photo red light enforcement. And an interesting thing about the driver education phase of this is that the first month of citations at these photo red light enforcement locations, they averaged 3 citations per hour, and then after the first 30 days, the citations went down to 1/2 a citation per hour. So drivers became aware that that was a dangerous location, slowed down, and their accident rates went way down.
One other question, if I could,
please.
And that's regarding the cost for operating the the red light equipment.
Yes. That would go up for RFP. I don't have a specific cost factor for that yet. We haven't even made that that inquiry yet.
All right. Thank you. Madam Chair, I do want to put on the record, I've always had an issue with this type of enforcement. I understand it's here as part of our society and know that this will probably move forward. There is one thing that's interesting. We have a prohibition or a restriction on cities of population of 300,000 or more, which would be Portland, of not having more than 12 intersections in the city being operated with red lights. So I'm not sure what the reports have been. I know there's supposed to be annual reports made back to the legislature. My biggest concern here, Chief, as a prosecutor, is not seeing machines take over positions of law enforcement. And what I don't want to see is cities basically have, let's say, more machines than officers, because I think the best enforcement is having an individual that's out there that can actually have the discretion, make the call that needs to be made, and maybe deliver a better message than something by machine.
Yeah, unfortunately, the locations where these accidents occur cannot be supervised because of the highway conditions there. It's not practical. And if you do pull somebody over for the citation, then you create a rear-end collision environment for traffic following up, and it slows traffic down if you do stop them because there's no lanes to stop people in.
I understand. I appreciate your forethought as to where you're envisioning these to be used and being supplemental and maybe a better safety means.
Right. It's strictly based on safety.
Okay. Thank you very much. Other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Andrea Meyer.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. I'm here today to express a few concerns that we have with photo radar and photo red light. And it mostly has to do with the vendors that the state of Oregon and cities are using. City of Portland uses affiliated computer services. And Canada just wrapped up a 19-month investigation and filed charges alleging bribery in a $90 million multi-year contract. Despite this, because this information was circulating and bubbling for a few years, in 2006, my understanding is that Portland renewed its contract with that business in a no-bid contract.
Oh, wait a minute. Back up. Madam Chair.
Senator Walker.
I want to make sure we're talking about the same company. So the same company that Canada had a problem with runs Portland's?
Chair Burdick, Senator Walker, that's what I understand. It's called Affiliated Computer Services, and I think I verified when there was a House bill that this is indeed the vendor. I got this information out of Willamette Week. It was a story here about the issues rising in Portland and then tracked down subsequent stories that were underlying the Willamette Week story about the Canada issue.
Which issue of Willamette Week was that?
The bribery in Canada, the criminal investigation in Canada, and the charges filed in Canada.
What week?
That the company engaged
in. No, what date?
Oh, I'm so sorry. What issue? I thought you could say, when did this?
Yeah.
So sorry. Chair Burdick, members of the committee, February 2006, a few weeks before the contract in Portland was renewed, Canadian authorities wrapped up an 18-month investigation. I think it's actually 19. So it was in about a year ago.
February 2006, okay.
And I can...
If you'd provide that to the committee, that would be helpful.
Absolutely, because I'm about to mention, Chair Berg, members of committee, that apparently in Newport uses RedFlex traffic systems, and I have an article from St. Peter's, Missouri, that the mayor pled guilty to accepting a bribe from that company. So you can see that there is some concerns that we have with these companies. You know, a lot of this has to do with the calibration that these machines are set. There was a House bill and testimony over there that the City of Portland pays very careful attention, and there are rules and requirements about how they calibrate it, because it's all about where you hit at what point in the intersection. That's a concern. But in addition, these companies, there's no limit on how much of the cut they take for each ticket. That's how these companies make their money, and, of course, the City of Portland's fate. They divide up the cut, and there's no limit in these contracts or on the cities that engage in this on how much the contract will go back to the vendor. So we raise these concerns. I wanted to add Another note, and Senator Przanski, you questioned about the number of in the city of Portland, 12. I just confirmed there was a House bill over there. It's still in play as far as I know. We had a hearing, and City of Portland, if I've got this right, wants to raise it to 24. So I just wanted to alert you to that. Now, I must not entirely take off my ACLU hat, but on a personal note, I was alleged to have violated a photo radar. My case was dismissed. So
somebody else was driving your car?
No, I had a good lawyer.
Okay, we're running out of time.
No, it's important. I wanted to point out a discrepancy in the law that my research led to, because we've talked about the protections and criteria. The Oregon Court of Appeals in State v. Kolish back in 2002 held that the requirements in 438 and 439 do not go hand in hand, because ORS 810.439 contains language notwithstanding any other provision of the law. And the court held that meant that the requirements set forth in point 438 were not necessary for an entity or city to comply with as long as they complied with the requirements in 439. So if we're looking at this area, and I don't see 439 on this, but it does have to do with sections 438, it would be good to address that concern and the court's determination that not all the criteria that a city must meet before posting and notice and all that are actually required of these cities to do. And I'd be happy to give case law the cite to it if the council would like. It is 185 ORAP 418.
Okay, we will look into that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any questions?
Mm-hmm. No, I've never liked this kind of stuff. So just
Senator Przanski.
They're going to have a hard time.
I think I'd just like to get the follow-up is from the witnesses to the background. I mean, my concern is I want to make sure there are the checks and balances. I'm kind of amazed to think that City of Portland could actually do a no-bid contract on something like this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
And Chair Burdick, members of the committee, I just want to be very clear that I did testify to that before, and I've not been corrected. The information came from a news article, and I've tried to make that clear. I don't have otherwise personal direct knowledge of that, but again, I've testified to this, and no one has clarified to me that I'm misspeaking about the fact that it was a no-bid contract.
Okay, well, I'll give the City of Portland a chance to say something if Mr. Landauer would be interested. Looks like we're running into jeopardy on the other bill that we wanted to hear, so we'll do the best we can. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Burdick. Mark Landauer with the Office of Government Relations for the City of Portland. I didn't, frankly, intend to testify on the bill today. However, Ms. Meyer has raised a question about why we used a no-bid contract to extend the existing contract for the photo red light enforcement program. It comes right down to technology. The City of Portland uses a wet film system. All the other jurisdictions in the state, to my knowledge, use a digital format. The reason why we use a wet film system is because it provides a greater resolution of the picture so that you can actually see into the vehicle. As many of you know, we have to do a gender match on these tickets. We check the photo, see whether or not the gender of the driver matches the registration of that vehicle. If there is a match, we then issue the citation. The wet film, we have, in our experience, the wet film actually provides a greater resolution in order to be able to make that match. That is why we have gone with ACS in the past and continue to do so, because they are the only firm that provide a wet film methodology to their system.
Thank you. Questions from the committee?
Madam Chair, could you also respond or get information to us as to what the percentage of what is the quote unquote revenue that's divided between?
I believe, and I'll have to check the latest contract, Chair Burdick, Senator Przanski. I believe that at least our last contract that I'm familiar with. The ACS received $27 for each citation in which a bail amount was provided. So there was a flat fee. The implication that there's no limitation on the amount that the company gets is flatly incorrect. The amount that the company gets is in fact negotiated in the contract.
I understand. I just want to know what that amount
is. Yeah, and I believe it's $27 per citation, but I'll certainly get back to you and let you know the precise number that we have, both for photo radar and photo red light, under our existing contracts.
Thank you. Are there other questions from the committee? Thank you for coming up. Committee, we are out of time. I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 528.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, 552. I had hoped to hold a hearing on 528, but we simply are out of time. So I am going to move the remaining bills over to next Tuesday's agenda, which I don't have in front of me, so please watch the internet for possible scheduling of these bills later in the week if it's not Tuesday, and that will be House Bill 2121A, 2122A, and Senate Bill 528. My apologies, I had hoped to get to at least one of those bills. So, just a reminder for the two remaining committee people, on Monday we will meet in the afternoon to hear Senate Bill 2 and Senate Bill 500, and then we will reconvene at 5:30 on Monday to hear those same two bills.
5:30.
We've changed it from 5 because of logistics down with the hearing room. So, with that announcement, we will be adjourned.
Give me a second.